I want to talk about something tonight that is a one of the subjects that is of the most interest to Christadelphians of any persuasion right now, or at least it was over the last few years, to my knowledge. I don't know where things stand right now. And believe it or not, this relates to it. This is from the New York Times. It was published in July of 2007. And it's a report on a study done by a university or something. There's a guy on the radio that says studies either confirm the obvious or they're wrong. And I think that that's a pretty good summary. But I think that this, accurate. I think it confirms the obvious. It won't be any surprise to you. The title of the article is this: Obesity Spreads to Friends. And it says this: Obesity can spread from person to person, much like a virus, according to researchers. When one person gains weight, close friends tend to gain weight too. Their study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, involved a detailed analysis of a large social network of 12,000 and some odd people who had been closely followed for 32 years, from 71 until 2003. The investigators knew who was friends with whom, as well as who was a spouse or sibling or neighbor, and they knew how much each person weighed at various times over 3 decades. And skipping down, it says, people were most likely to become obese when a friend became obese. That increased one's chances of becoming obese by 57%. There was no effect when a neighbor gained or lost weight, however. And the greatest influence of all was between mutual close friends. There, if one became obese, the other had a 171% increased chance of becoming obese too. The same effect seemed to occur for weight loss, the investigators say, but since most people were gaining, not losing over the 32 years, the result was an obesity epidemic. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, a physician and professor of medical sociology at Harvard Medical School and a principal investigator in the new study, says one explanation is that friends affect each other's perception of fatness. When a close friend becomes obese, obesity may not look so bad. You change your idea, this is a quote, you change your idea of what is an acceptable body type by looking at the people around you, Christakis said. The investigators say their findings can help explain why Americans became fatter in recent years. Persons who became obese were likely to drag some friends with them. The effects, Christakis said, highlight the importance of a spreading process, a kind of social contagion that spreads through the network. And the end of what I'm going to read says, it also might mean that the way to avoid becoming fat is to avoid having fat friends. Well, we're not particularly concerned about obesity, but what this demonstrates and what we're attempting to discuss this evening is, we begin to resemble those with whom we most closely associate. Do you agree with that? You think that's true? Not the way that they look necessarily. Let's say if you wanted to avoid engaging in immorality, maybe you should not have immoral friends. If you wanted to avoid adopting some form of false doctrine, maybe you shouldn't associate closely and have close friends that hold false doctrine. The same as what's suggested there in relation to personal health. Sin is a social contagion, I believe. It is a disease, and we know this because it's depicted by leprosy throughout the Old Testament and the laws concerning sin as a social contagion or disease. Now, we all know this. Anybody that has raised children or was raised as a child, you told your children or your parents told you and were concerned about the group of people that you associated with, weren't they? Because we believe this. We believe in what people derogatorily call contamination by association. That's what it is. Sin is a disease. It is a contagion in whatever form, moral or doctrinal. We believe in contamination by association. And rightly so. You believed it when you were raising your kids, and your parents believed it when they were raising you. That's why Brother Todd always has the saying. I remember it. If you hang around a barber shop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. That's what they do there. Let's look at a couple of passages here. Leviticus 15. Since I don't have a chalkboard, I'm going to use some volunteers, and I will choose who you are, who the volunteers are here in a minute, to demonstrate something. We start to resemble those with whom we closely associate, that with which we closely associate. Leviticus 15, start at verse 2. Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when ye be come into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you. Well, I'm reading from Numbers 15. That's why it doesn't sound like what I want it to sound like. Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when any man hath a running issue out of his flesh, because of his issue he is unclean. Now that's not a very pleasant description of a problem, is this disease or this infection, a running issue of the flesh. Now what is the flesh, scripturally speaking, what is the flesh synonymous with? Sin, that's right. So what we're being shown here through this law, I believe, and I'm not get into a big exposition of it because it's pretty obvious in and of itself. A running issue of the flesh is some uncontrolled aspect of sin. Because of his issue, he is unclean. And this shall be his uncleanness in his issue. Whether his flesh run with his issue or his flesh be stopped from his issue, it is his uncleanness. Every bed whereon he lieth that hath the issue is unclean. And everything whereon he sitteth shall be unclean. All right, my first volunteer is Jefferson. Would you come down here, please, Jefferson? Jeffrey is going to have the privilege of having a running issue of the flesh tonight. And this is going to be his bed, but don't lay on it. I'm not sure. Okay, so what we've just read here, Jeffrey has a running issue of the flesh. Everything whereon he sitteth, the bed whereon he lieth, is unclean. So he sits on this bed here, or he lays on this bed. He sits in that chair that he just came from. He himself is unclean, is what Moses is. The Lord is telling us through Moses. Now the chair that he was sitting in over there, and the bed that he lies in at night, is also unclean because of his contact with it. What does he do? He contaminates everything that he touches, doesn't he? He contaminates it by his association, his interaction with that piece of furniture, whatever case it might be. He contaminates that through his association and contact with it. Okay, now let's go on here. Don't leave yet. Verse 5. This is where things start getting really bad. Verse 5. And whosoever toucheth his bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the even. Now Jacob, would you please come here also? Whosoever toucheth his bed shall be unclean until the evening. So now Jacob has a third party in this, okay? This is what people derogatorily call third party contamination. Okay? And it's what Moses is teaching us. Jacob touches this bed, or he goes over there and sits where this man with the running issue of the flesh, Jeffrey, sat back there. Are you sitting next to Lydia? Is that where you want? Okay, don't go back to it. If he sits over there, he is contaminated by it. So now Jeffrey, because of his running issue of the flesh, has contaminated everything that he sat on and everything that he lied on, and everything that anybody else touches that he touched is contaminated as well, is defiled, is unclean, it says here. Verse 5, and be unclean until the even. He goes on. And he that sitteth on anything whereon he sat that hath the issue shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. So Jeffrey, with his running issue of the flesh, has managed to make Jacob unclean without ever coming in contact with him directly. Through this intermediary, the bed or the chair, whatever he sat on in life. Okay, you can sit down. You can do the rest. People can sit down. Thank you for your help. I really appreciate that, Jeffrey and Jacob. Okay. 7 and 8. And he that toucheth the flesh of him that hath the issue shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. So now as Jacob touches Jeffrey directly, he's unclean. He's contaminated by his association with Jeffrey. Verse 8. And if he that hath the issue spit upon him that is clean, why would he spit on him? I don't know, but if he does it, then he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean. So now we've got his spit. He's able to project this a little bit, in a way, and transmit this unclean. Contaminate someone else through their association with him. Now we get down to verse 9 and we have this reiteration. And what saddle soever he rideth upon that hath the issue shall be unclean. Just to make sure we don't think this only relates to the chair and the bed that he sits on. Anything, any saddle that he sits on is defiled. Verse 10. And here's the third party contamination again. Whosoever toucheth anything that is under him shall be unclean until the even, and he that beareth any of those things shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. So we just have it over and over and over again. The uncleanness of this person with the running issue of the flesh, the ceremonial uncleanness we might specify, is transmitted to inanimate objects, and then from inanimate objects back to people. Now, this is all repeated with regard to women in verses 19 to 28. Basically the same thing, with a little more specificity as relates to women there. And in verse 31, here is what the conclusion basically is. Leviticus 15, verse 31. Thus shall ye separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. So you see, this all had to do with God preserving his holiness and the holiness of his tabernacle, which was the center of their system of worship, wasn't it? This is the way that you separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle. So we've got the problem here then being carried yet another step to the tabernacle. And God doesn't want his tabernacle defiled. Now, let's go over to Leviticus 11. Leviticus 11. Here we have various animals divided into clean and unclean categories, which is to say those that were fit for consumption and eating, using for food, and those that were unfit for such purposes. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 9, verses 9 and 10, you don't have to turn there, but it says, it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Or saith he it altogether for our sake? And then he says further, for our sake no doubt this is written. In other words, these ceremonial and these very clear instructions that were given under the law were intended to teach us something in relation to morality. They were intended to teach us spiritual lessons and moral lessons and social lessons. Don't muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn. The ox was not God's concern. He was teaching a spiritual and a moral lesson to the people. Now, as we read through this, well, let's just go ahead and read this, verse 8, Leviticus 11, verse 8. Of their flesh, he goes through and names a bunch of unclean animals. Of their flesh shall ye not eat, and their carcass shall ye not touch. They are unclean to you. Verse 24, and for these you shall be unclean. Whosoever toucheth the carcass of them shall be unclean until the even. So here we have an animal, this unclean animal, transmitting, contaminating those who touch it through their association with it. Contamination by association under the law here. Now we might ask, as Paul did, doth the Lord take care for the coney, for the hare, or the swine, or the locust, and all the other animals that are listed here? Is that what his concern really was? What's he trying to teach us here with the division of these animals into clean and unclean ceremonial categories? The lesson, and I'm sure you've all heard this discussed in detail, which I'm not going to get into. My dad gave a real good talk years ago about the characteristics of these clean and unclean animals, and they have spiritual counterparts. These animals are descriptions of individuals' characters. The ones that we should associate with, that we should eat with, that we should consume, and the ones that we should not. Those that we should emulate, and those that we should not. But it's not just on an individual, our responsibility to imitate these characteristics, because we see here, you're not supposed to touch them. So it's a teaching about our relationship with these characteristics in other people. Now, he goes on, and I'm not going to read all of this, but that's repeated over and over. You touch it, you're unclean. You touch it, you're unclean. Contamination by association. Now, I do think that I want to, let's see here. Verse 31. Yeah, verse 31. These are unclean to you among all that creep. Whosoever doth touch them, when they be dead, shall be unclean until the even. And upon whatsoever any of them, when they are dead, doth fall, it shall be unclean. Whether it be any vessel of wood, or raiment, or skin, or sack, whatsoever vessel it be, wherein any work is done, it must be put into water, and it shall be unclean until the even, so it shall be clean. So we have this animal falling onto some instrument of productivity or skin or raiment and all these things, it contaminates that object that it touches upon its death. Verse 33, and every earthen vessel whereinto any of them falleth, whatsoever is in it shall be unclean, and ye shall break it of all meat. Now this is important here again. Of all meat which may be eaten, that on which such water cometh shall be unclean. So now we have an unclean animal or creeping thing, a bug or whatever. This unclean animal falls into a pot of water. It's contaminated. That unclean water is poured onto this piece of clean meat. Verse 34, of all meat which may be eaten, necessarily it is of a clean animal. If that water that has been contaminated by that dead animal is poured onto a clean piece of meat, the meat is then contaminated. Contamination by association, and in fact, third party contamination, as we might hear it derogatorily called. But, though it's used in a derogatory form, it is in fact a truth. Let's see, do we need to... Yeah, let's go down to verse 43. Ye shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall ye make yourselves unclean with them, that ye should be defiled thereby. For I am Yahweh your God, ye shall therefore sanctify yourselves. This is what we read back in Leviticus 15. The purpose of this was to focus upon the holiness of the Lord and preserve His system of worship. Ye shall sanctify yourselves. Don't make yourselves abominable with these things. And that's the effect of it. This contamination makes us, makes them abominable. Its counterpart, its moral, spiritual counterpart, contaminates us and makes us abominable, just as it did ceremonially to them. Ye shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall ye defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Down to verse 47. This is the purpose for which he brought them out of Egypt. To make a difference between the unclean and the clean, between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten. Now, we come along, well, let's see what this is. By partaking of these unclean, abominable creatures, they made themselves abominable, defiled, and unclean. Those are the various terms used. They were to put a difference between the clean and the unclean, but, as we know, they failed to uphold this. Not only on the ceremonial level, but they failed to uphold it on the social, on the spiritual, on the moral plane as well. The real concern and the real focus of what was being taught here, we go over to Malachi, chapter 3. Malachi 3, verse 14. The Jews asked the Lord a question in verse 13. What have we spoken so much against thee? Because the Lord told them, your words have been stout against me. Yet ye say, what have we spoken so much against thee? And here's the answer. Ye have said, it is vain to serve God. And what profit is it that we have kept His ordinance and that we have walked mournfully before Yahweh of hosts? And now we call the proud happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, they that tempt God are even delivered. They weren't putting the difference between the clean and the unclean. Down to verse 18. This is what He desires. Then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, the clean and the unclean animals, antitype, spiritual counterpart, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not. God wants us to discern those things. He wanted Israel to discern between the righteous and the wicked, between those that serve God and those that serve him not. And he still wants spiritual Israel to do that today. Now we could go through, actually we will go back to Leviticus 22 here for a moment. Leviticus 22 verse 4. What man soever of the seed of Aaron is a leper, or hath a running issue, he shall not eat of the holy things until he be clean. And whosoever toucheth anything that is unclean by the dead, or a man whose seed goeth from him, or whosoever toucheth any creeping thing whereby he may be made unclean, or a man of whom he may take uncleanness. A man may take uncleanness from another man. He can be contaminated by his association with him, with that unclean, defiled, abominable man used in various places here throughout these passages we've been reading. We can take uncleanness from another person. We can be made unclean by touching things made unclean by a dead body, a third party. Numbers 19 expands on this and closes by saying, whatsoever the unclean, and speaking of things that are unclean by a dead body, whatsoever the unclean person touches shall be unclean. And the soul that touches it shall be unclean until evening. A man that's touched the dead body is made unclean. He's defiled. He's contaminated. Anything he touches is contaminated. Anybody that touches the thing that he touched is contaminated, is defiled, and is unclean in the scriptural language. Contamination by association is an undeniable principle of the scriptures. Third party contamination is an undeniable principle and teaching of the scriptures. You may disagree with the spiritual, moral, and social implications of it, but it is an undeniable scriptural principle. Some people have an answer to the question, what is the spiritual and moral implication of this contamination by association that's so clearly taught in the law? And I don't think that some people do have answers to it, but some do. You can't get upset with them for having an answer or an explanation for what the spiritual counterpart of these things are. Let's go over to Haggai. He knew what the spiritual counterpart was. Haggai 2, verse 11. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, ask now the priests concerning the law, saying this, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, okay, he take clean meat, meat from a clean animal, and put it in the skirt of his garment, touches his garment, in other words, and with his skirt then, he touched the clean meat to his skirt. Now he's taking his skirt and with his garment, or with his skirt, do touch bread or pottage or wine or oil or any meat, shall it be holy? So the question is, can holiness be transmitted in that way to second and third parties? Can we contaminate people with holiness? Anyone? That's right. Just as sin in the garden came down and descended universally, and justification comes on an individual basis. These are scriptural, fundamental scriptural principles. We're all familiar with them. We shouldn't be surprised when it comes to be the case in other aspects of sin. Then Haggai, and the priest answered and said no. Just like you. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, what? Absolutely. As we've already been through. So I've touched the dead body and been made unclean myself, and now I go and touch the pottage or the wine or the meal or whatever else touches me. If I go and touch that, after I've been contaminated from that first to the second party, and I go and touch it, what does Haggai say? The priest said, it shall be unclean. Third party contamination. The dreading. So we have this comparison between cleanness and uncleanness, demonstrating that the cleanness, the holiness, is not contagious as the uncleanness, as the sin. Verse 14. Here we have, this is where it's plainly told to us what the meaning of all this is. All this ceremonial stuff has reference to moral and spiritual things. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, saith Yahweh, and so is every work of their hands, and that which they offer before me is unclean. Does the Lord take care of the oxen, or for ponies, or hares, or creeping things upon the earth? Not particularly. The lesson is intended to teach us spiritual and moral things, and if we miss it, we're missing out on some very critical things. This is evident from the sin of Achan in the Joshua chapter, in Joshua chapter 7, who took of the Babylonian goods that were forbidden and hid them in his tent to the ignorance of everyone else in the congregation. But what happened? Israel, the nation, suffered and didn't know why, because of one man's sin. Now the question is, does your actions and do my actions have an effect on anyone other than ourselves? You better believe it. Absolutely. Other people suffered not even knowing that they were associated with someone who was harboring secretly these Babylonian goods. Lot's family in Sodom. Contamination by association. He managed to get out. He lost his wife on the way out. And do you think that he's, in the long run, did he really save his daughter? Evil and sin is a contagion. Immorality and apostasy are social diseases. They spread through social structure. What is a spiritual social structure? The ecclesia, okay? Immorality, error, false doctrine, are social diseases that spread through social structures. They spread through ecclesias, okay? So the scriptures abound with warnings against association with these contagion, because it will contaminate. 1 Corinthians 15. Verse 33. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners, morals. Be not deceived. Why did he have to say, be not deceived, before he said that? Why do you think he had to say, don't be deceived, evil communications, evil interactions, corrupt good morals? Because that's all that has been taught through the things we've been reading here. Contamination by association. You begin to resemble those with whom you most closely associate. Your parents knew it when they were raising you, and you knew it when you were raising your children. That's why you had those concerns about who they were running around with. And they had concerns about who you were running around with. And so it went all the way back. And that's why Isaac and Rebekah were grieved when Esau went and married the Gentile daughter. Contamination by association. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good morals. Now, let's look at Psalm 1. When we recognize this fact, sin is a contagion, immorality and apostasy are social diseases. When we recognize these facts and we see the spiritual and moral counterparts to the ceremonial instruction found in the law concerning uncleanness and contamination by association and this third party contamination and defilement. When we understand God's concern with holiness and sanctification, then all of this, all these passages that warn against association become clear. The purpose of them. He doesn't just say it for the fun of it. Blessed is the man that walketh not. Blessed, what's the better translation of that? If we were to say it literally from the Hebrew. Blessed. Oh, how happy. Oh, how happy is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of Yahweh, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. He's not interested in association with these contaminants, with these social contagions, with these moral diseases and spiritual diseases. He doesn't associate with it. He's not interested in it. Psalm 106. Psalm 106:34. They, Israel here, they did not destroy the nations concerning whom Yahweh commanded them, but were mingled among the heathen and learned their work, and they served their idols, which were a snare unto them. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto devils, and shed innocent blood, even the blood of their sons and of their daughters, whom they sacrificed unto the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. Thus were they defiled with their own work, and went a-whoring with their own inventions. Why? Because instead of destroying and eradicating the contaminants from the land, eradicating these social contagions, they let them stay. They associated with them. And what did they do? They ended up resembling them. And it turns out, we're told, they went on to do even worse than the nations around them. And if we were go to look for the ecclesial counterpart to that, what do we find was going on in Corinth? I hear that there's fornication named among you. And not just any fornication, but things that are not even named among the Gentiles were going on in that ecclesia. Contaminated through their association, they began to resemble and then went on as if to show how good they could do it. Okay. We could go on and read Proverbs 1, 10 and 15, Proverbs 4, 14 through 15, Proverbs 9, 6, Proverbs 22, 24 through 25, Proverbs 24, 1, 2 John 10 and 11, 1 Timothy 5, 22, Ephesians 5, 11, 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 11, and they would all say the same thing. Don't partake of other men's sins. Don't bid them Godspeed. Don't associate with them. Have no fellowship with these things. Why? Because they will contaminate you. You will begin to resemble those things with which you most closely associate. And what closer association do we have, brethren, than within the ecclesia? So, the scriptures tell us not only the association that we should avoid and the characteristics we should avoid, but the ones that we should seek out and associate with instead of that. And let's look at Proverbs 2, verse 20. That thou mayest walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of the righteous. Associate with them instead of with the others. Those that will encourage, iron sharpening iron. Those types of relationships. Those types of social. Not the ones that defile and make you abominable. Proverbs 13, verse 20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Psalm 119, Verse 115. Depart from me, ye evildoers, for I will keep the commandments of my God. Also, verse 63. I am a companion of all them that fear thee, and of them that keep thy precepts. Malachi 3. We read part of this. Malachi 3:16. Then they that feared Yahweh spake often one to another, and Yahweh hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before them for them that feared Yahweh and that thought upon his name. And they shall be mine, saith Yahweh of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. So we see where we should be turning, what we should be associating with, as well as the things that we're told to avoid. We all know this, as I said, from raising our children or from having been raised as children. We know that we become and start to resemble those with whom we most closely associate. We know that sin is a contagion and a disease that is transmissible. If we went into a quarantine, an Ebola quarantine center. We've got a room full of people with Ebola. How many people without Ebola do we have to put in there to heal the people with Ebola? 10 times or what? The answer is you don't. You can't. People with Ebola, which we might pretty easily associate with that running issue of the flesh on a physical, strictly literal sense. People with Ebola don't get healed by associating with people without Ebola. People with Ebola get healed through medication and all these other things if they get healed at all. What happens instead? It's not that we just don't heal them. It's that all the people that are foolish enough to think, well, if we spend enough time with these people with Ebola and we get our healthy bodies close to their sickly bodies, we'll rub off on them. We'll influence them some physiological way back into healthiness. They end up with Ebola themselves, don't they? And you can pick whatever disease you want. That's the reality of it. It's a physical, it is a social, it is a moral, and it is a spiritual fact. Evil and sin are the contagions, and mere association with it will not heal it. We avoid exposure to deadly, contagious physical diseases, but at times we immerse ourselves among the social and spiritual disease and think that we will improve their condition rather than defile ourselves and make ourselves unclean and abominable and begin to in fact resemble them. But on a physical level, we certainly wouldn't do that because we're not foolish. We make ourselves abominable and unclean in the moral and the spiritual plane by our association with these things. Paul says, for this cause, many are weak and sickly and many sleep. Was he talking about literal sickness? Literal weakness? Literal sleeping or death? No, he was talking about because of their lack of discernment. They were spiritually weak. They were spiritually sick. And they were spiritually dead. Because of a lack of discernment. The way to avoid... The way to avoid becoming fat is to avoid having fat. I don't care how much you weigh, but I don't want you to be on the wrong side of this spiritual issue, these moral issues. I don't want you to be on the wrong side of that. This actually matters. This is just for demonstration. We begin to resemble those with whom we associate. One of the ways to avoid falling to immorality and false doctrine is to avoid association with it. Not just around the memorial table. I heard something I could not believe this earlier this year. An ecclesia, in an effort to reach out to friends and family in some way, they are going to have a worship service on Sunday. And so as not to have any controversy or upset anyone, they will forego the memorial service of our Lord's death at that worship service. Well, they don't have a memorial service at the Baptist church down the street from me on Sunday. Does that mean it's okay for me to go there? Or if I did that, do you think I'd begin to resemble that? What they believe, even if I didn't participate in the communion. You see, these things aren't just about ceremonial uncleanness anymore to us. This is about moral and spiritual and doctrinal defilement. This is the intent of it, of these lessons that we've been considering. Avoid actual association with it and friendship with it. Associate instead with those who attempt to uphold the precepts of the Scripture, as we read there in Malachi. They that feared the Lord spake often one to another. In other words, they spoke to other people that feared the Lord. That's who they were associating with. That's who they were knit together with. They weren't running around in association with the others. They that feared Yahweh spake often one to another, and says, they shall be mine, saith Yahweh of hosts, in the day that I make up my jewels. Hard enough, brethren. We've got enough things pushing against us. We've got the natural inclination of the flesh with us on a daily basis. Not only a daily basis, but every moment. The natural inclination of the flesh. We need to put ourselves in spiritual environments that will actually strengthen and encourage us to fight those things. The things that come from within and the things that we're bombarded with on a daily basis from the world without. Going into our ecclesia on Sunday morning, on Wednesday night, whenever, our spiritual association should be things that encourage us to fight that. There are two Christadelphian communities today. One is fighting to preserve a Christadelphian community, and they labor with all their might to preserve a community. And there is another Christadelphian community. And I believe that it labors and fights with all its might to preserve the truth. We'll have our closing hymn.